listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. From the U.S. Supreme Court this morning, no ruling on the case known as Janus versus AFSCME. On the phone with us is Eric Hines. He's president of the California Teachers Association, which has 325,000 or so members in the state. Eric is in Minneapolis at the moment for the annual National Education Association Assembly. And Mr. Hines, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Are you reading anything into the court waiting at this point to announce this decision?
Well, you know, I think if I had a crystal ball like that, I would be, I'd probably be famous. But no, it's really hard to tell. And as we know with the Supreme Court in the past, it's not a decision until it's a decision. And we'll just have to wait until tomorrow to see, hopefully tomorrow, to see what that decision is.
Some people say that the bigger decisions are put off to the very end or even close to a weekend to kind of quell any big reaction that might come.
That may be it. Like I said, it's almost a cottage industry trying to predict what the Supreme Court's going to do. But like I said, it won't happen until it happens.
Court watchers are, though, counting votes now that there are 9 justices again, and you are there with the NEA in Minneapolis. What's the buzz, but I really want to know, what's the expectation of this decision?
Well, you know, we're not so much focusing. Well, the decision's going to happen, and whatever the decision is, there's really very little thing, little we can do about that. What we can do is really focus, and what we've been focusing on in California as CTA is still improving education for students, and that means improving funding for our schools, where we're still, ranked 42nd, 43rd, even with the fifth largest economy, focusing on providing good professional development for students, and making sure that we can attract and retain the best and the brightest, since we're facing a teacher shortage in California. That's where the real meat is happening. And all of this other stuff with Janus is simply big, but it's side drama. And we're going to continue, regardless of the way the decision turns out, we're going to continue to focus on our students in California.
To be more clear, the Janus case is Mark Janus, an Illinois government employee, versus the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31. And the court is going to decide whether agency union agreements can be invalidated under the First Amendment. So Rebecca Friedrichs brought a similar case to the court, which ended in a 4-4 tie 2 years ago. A rehearing petition was denied. Do you see this case, the Janus case, as a similar, though smaller, case?
Well, yes, it is. It is almost identical to the Friedrichs case, and that's no mistake. This push is not coming from a grassroots movement of teachers or workers. In fact, it's being funded by the National Right to Work organizations who are trying to defang and defund unions, and now it's public sector unions. And so it's really an attack on every worker and every family in California and across the country, and trying to weaken our voice to get together.
Let me take that a step further. Do you see it as an attempt to defund Democrats, Democratic organizations?
Well, when we recommend, and I can speak for California, and I know also nationally with NEA, we recommend many Republicans. It's really about the educational issue and their educational platform. If they support providing good public schools for every student in California or in the country, regardless of the zip code they live in, we will support them as a candidate. And we've supported many Republican candidates down the road, as well as Democrats.
So my question, Eric, was really about kind of pulling this apart and saying, how much is this a union case versus how much is it a politically motivated action case? And maybe less in the specific candidates that are supported, but a division of parties and platforms?
Well, when we look at what this case is really about, and first of all, it's about paying fair share fees. what simply the case that they're trying to overturn about 41, 42 years ago or so, Abood versus Detroit Unified School District, really said and has been the established law for 40 years that you can't be forced to join a union. Nobody can. But you benefit from being part of that collective bargaining unit where there is collective bargaining. You get all the raises. You get the job protections. The union still has to protect you if you're treated unfairly. And you should pay a fair share for those services that you receive and the benefits you receive. That's what's really at stake here. And they couch it. Nobody pays for political things that they don't want to. We have a very open process for deciding who we're going to support as candidates and what positions we support moving forward in education. Now, in California, we have an almost 800-member delegate body called our State Council of Education, which meets four times a year. These are local delegates that are elected by local teachers to represent them, and they set the policy and who we support and all of that. They start with doing the interviews for candidates that are running for office, all viable candidates. They make all the policy decisions. They decide how all the money is spent. It just keeps going on, and it keeps being debated the entire way up the process. But it's that 800-member body, or almost 800-member body, that actually makes our decisions. And those are representative of every state in, or every part of our state in California. And again, they meet four times a year. Nothing comes out of my mouth that hasn't been vetted and debated through policy by that body.
You're listening to Eric Hines. He is president of the California Teachers Association. He is speaking to us from Minneapolis today. I think you know that Rebecca Friedrichs of the Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association was on the show last week with guest host Beth Duncan. Part of her position was that most teachers appreciate local association, but they feel they're forced to support state and national interests. She broke it down in a money sense of the $1,000 a year dues. The majority goes to CTA, a small piece goes to NEA, and then an even smaller piece, she said $157 of that $1,000 went to the local. And that was part of her key issue. So how do you respond to that specific point?
Well, I mean, first of all, each the dues level that teachers pay in what's called the unified teaching profession, local, state, and national, are set by that body at that level. So the amount she pays to CTA is determined by our state council through a formula, and that's the CTA portion.
But is it true, could I pause you for a moment, is it true that no matter what that amount, the breakdown always is the majority goes to CTA, the next level goes to NEA, and the smallest level is local?
It depends on what their the local decides. Usually, each local is different because it's locally decided. So the amount she pays to her local or any teacher pays to their local is decided democratically through a representative body, sometimes through a member vote. They use different processes at the local level. CTA doesn't influence what she pays in her local
each school district,
what anybody pays. So
district makes that decision?
Each local union, which
local
is usually
union.
In the local, yeah. So in Los Angeles, they decide how they want, how much union they want to pay to their local to keep their local business, to be able to do things like that. At the CTA level, it's, again, our state council that makes that decision through a democratic process. They've decided on a formula how that works. And where I am now in Minneapolis, where our national body, the Representative Assembly, which is almost 8,000 members that are locally elected, including myself, to represent local teachers, the NEA sets what level dues it decides to pay. So they're all decided separately and depending on the need of that local. Although the money, of course, gets supported back and forth depending on what the work that needs to be done.
Right. Her basic position, and I do want to give you a chance to respond to this, is that collective bargaining in the public sector is political. Do you disagree with that?
Well, I think anytime democracy is political, and anytime we as workers decide to get together and have a collective voice, To that extent, you know, anything, everything we do is political, but it's collective bargaining, and our dues are funded through, it's voluntary dues that we pay through from our salaries, and, you know, everything we do is designed, you know, when we talk about, like, you know, say Sacramento politics, everything that we do in our classrooms, every decision we make, and I'm a teacher. I'm an elementary school teacher in Pittsburgh, which is in Northern California, in Contra Costa County, and everything we do as teachers is decided through politics. I mean, everything we do. But to say it's inherently political and I think is a talking point of the National Right to Work people and the extremists and billionaires who are trying to fund this effort and take out the voice or at very least weaken the voice of working people to be able to get together. Let me tell you why this is important. We don't have to look any further than the last election primary in California. When we look what money was spent to support a candidate who supported Antonio Villagrosa, where they threw in almost $30 million to support him, and not through a grassroots effort of people who wanted to express their, but a billionaire. Reed Hastings wrote a check for $7 million. I, as a teacher, and there isn't a teacher in California that can do that. The only way I can have my political voice is by choosing to get together collectively with my colleagues and through a democratic process decide who we're going to support because of their educational stance, and then we're going to support those people in the best way possible. And so I take a little bit from my check, they take a little bit from their check, and we together decide how we're going to support the candidates.
I think there's a bit of a parallel there, because in you saying that you objected to Reed Hastings and the bigger charter school advocates with money stepping in and influencing the race the way they did, it sounds like what the teachers are saying, with the majority of their dues going to state and national interests, that they feel like they're being shifted to represent people or platforms that they don't want to. So do you see a parallel?
Well, I didn't say I objected to him spending $7 million. What I said was that I can't spend $7 million, nor can any worker in California spend $7 million. And the only voice we have is through our collective joining together in our collective union to decide how we want to be able to influence policies that benefit our public schools and that benefit our students. You know, I think that you know, Reed has, you know, can spend whatever he chooses and however he chooses. But if I have a different stance, and so do my colleagues, then through our policy and through our process, then we can also collectively decide how we want to do that. And I think that's part of the democratic process. And it's not all the work we do. I mean, the when we say all the money, you know, that goes to CTA, we also do a lot of work around professional development for teachers. We have a project where we partner with Stanford University, and it's called the Instructional Leadership Corps, and actually training local educators to do professional development in their local districts. We work with through the our Institute for Teaching to foster innovation and give mini grants for teachers to do some very exciting things. We're working very strongly to help develop a good process. We're doing some exciting things in education in California.
Mr. Hines, can I jump in, though? Because
sure,
if the fees become optional, all these great programs that you're listing, then what happens to them? What procedurally changes depending on the court's ruling?
Well, it depends on how the court decides. I mean, if they decide that in Janice's favor, then and rule against the, you know, working people and families, then in fact those fair share payers then we will stop, you know, the day after to comply with the ruling, stop collecting fees from those fair share payers. What those fair share payers just pay for is the amount that is part of that collective bargaining that they benefit for. Their money that would go to political action that is considered non-chargeable is all rebated back to them.
Mm. I was going to say, which is a likely scenario with Justice Gorsuch expected to take a position against the union in this case, That's just a suspicion at this point. We don't have a ruling from the court. And I think it's interesting to think about what the ruling on this case might have been if Merrick Garland had become a justice on the court. And I don't know how deep in the weeds you get in the justices and their politics, but can you explore that a bit with me?
Well, you know, it's hard to play the what-if game. You know, we could certainly go very deeply into that. My concern now is what affects the students that I teach, and that's the concern of every teacher in California now, how this ruling will affect how we the collective voice we have in affecting the students we teach, and that's the primary thing. And we've been focusing very strongly on making sure that every student we teach, if we go through preschool through graduate school, over 9 million students. That's a lot of students that will be affected by this, and by teachers losing or having their voice weakened, weakens our ability to advocate for those students. And now, especially now, when we're doing things like thanks to Governor Brown and his local control funding formula and building local accountability plans together with communities, focusing on that and things that actually work to improve schools and improve student learning, attract the best and the brightest to the profession, that's where we should be focusing. This whole political side drama, we know where the money comes from for this, and we know the agenda. They're not even being very, very coy about it. They're simply saying we want to defang and defund unions because they give money to Democrats.
Well, to reflect on the history you mentioned, though, it is true. The issues have been similar and argued in different ways, but over 40 years. The reason I bring up the justices is that one of the major differences is who's sitting on the high court.
Absolutely.
Who has a vote here?
Yes. No, yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's like just playing the what-if game. I certainly, in my head, sometimes when you're sitting around talking what could be and what could have been. Unfortunately, we have to deal with what is and what the reality is, because that's where the real impact comes.
Okay, and one last question then. If the fees become optional, does CTA need to organize and roll out some sort of campaign to convince teachers across the state to keep paying the fees, position and maybe become more transparent about those fees so that there's a different level of understanding?
Well, like I said, our dues are determined through a democratic process and are actually quite transparent to our members. If all they have to do is look, it's how we do that. If we remain relevant to our members and they understand the things we do, they understand the need for a collective voice. It's not, these are people who care about, they care about our students. They care about their profession. Yes, they care about salaries and health benefits. But as altruistic as you may be, you can't go into teaching if you can't afford to feed your family. And if you can't afford to pay the rent or pay a mortgage or things like that, or if you stay in the profession for 30 years, but you can't depend upon a reliable or dependable retirement, or if you can't, pay health benefits. There are the people in the state that workers in the state who work primarily to pay for health benefits. I met a school secretary was working part time, and at the end of the year, which she did, or end of the month when she got paid, she handed the check back to the district and added more money just for benefits for her family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just wrong. And if we want to create an environment where we want to improve our schools, we need to do the kinds of things that improve our schools, and that means a good, strong, stable collective bargaining environment. That's why the Attorney Generals of California and the United States at the time argued in favor of and against the Friedrichs case at the Supreme Court when Friedrichs was there. It brings stability to the system, and we also know that it improves education. And if that weren't the case, we could see what happens in Wisconsin and what's the chaos that's happened in Wisconsin. We would see Mississippi and Louisiana at the top of the rankings, but they're not there. In fact, I would argue exactly the opposite.
You are speaking to the much bigger conversation, and when we have specifics from the High Court about this ruling, I think we'll be able to go into much more detail about what's next and what are the implications for every state. So, Mr. Hines, thanks so much for your time today, for stepping out of the conference in Minneapolis. We're glad to have you on Insight.
It's entirely my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That is Eric Hines. He is president of the California Teachers Association. As soon as that ruling comes from the High Court over the next couple days, we will bring it to you. And you're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.